Welcome. Today is Thursday, November the 17th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, is there turmoil in the Trump transition? Reporters say they can't get access.
We're given information barely at all, really, unless we yell out to people and they want to come over. But for the most part, we are ignored.
Climate scientists worry about what will happen in the next administration. And election anxiety. Therapists in the U.S. have been busy. Also ahead, and the new gaming gifts Americans are thinking about for the holidays. It's all on today's International Edition. President-elect Donald Trump says his transition to power is going smoothly, rebuffing reports of tough infighting among key advisors about top national security appointments in his government. He said on his Twitter account, it is a quote, "very organized process taking place as I decide on cabinet and many other positions." He said he talked with numerous world leaders since his stunning upset victory a week ago in the lengthy presidential campaign. The president-elect also dismissed accounts in the New York Times and other publications that he was trying to get top-level security clearance for three of his children and son-in-law. Still, information has been sparse, as VOA's Tina Trin outside Trump Tower in New York explains to International Edition host Ira Melman.
We're behind a rope line here, right inside the front lobby of Trump Tower, right in front of the four elevators that lead up to his office. So far, we know as much as what the press is reporting. We are stationed here throughout the day, trying to catch people as they come and go. It's almost like we're a bit like celebrity paparazzi, and we're given information barely at all, really, unless we yell out to people and they want to come over. But for the most part, we are ignored, and we have to chase people down. But now they're even preventing us from doing that. So we're kind of roped behind this velvet rope and trying to grab people as they come and go. But it's a hard process, and every once in a while we get a few answers, but they're pretty general, and it's basically we're on track, transition team looks great. When you press them for specifics, no names other than the two appointments that we both know so far, which is Steve Bannon and Ryan Priebus.
And nothing else. So has anybody come out? Have you talked to anybody about what's going on?
Kellyanne Conway just got back from D.C. She was in D.C. meeting with the transition team over there and said that everything is looking good, that they're excited, that putting a government together is obviously takes a lot of work, and they're not ready to name names. We're just hoping for a hard and fast date for any type of press conference, any type of official information, and yet there's still a bit of secrecy, you know, surrounding specifics here, and we're hard-pressed to try and get more specific answers out of these folks, trying to get his aides as they come and go, and, you know, yesterday, for example, Mike Pence was in town and came through. One of his aides gave us the heads up that he was going to make a statement. He walked in, said nothing to us, walked straight into the elevators, took the elevators up. We waited all day for him to come down and maybe eventually make that statement that we were promised. At the end of the day, around 6 o'clock or so, he walked out and said nothing other than great day, great day. So this is kind of what we're working with at this point.
Well, we do know, and because nobody saw it, we're guessing that Trump went out for dinner with his family last night, but he didn't follow protocol. Mm-hmm. Explain that.
Yeah, the remaining poolers who were here, they received an official lid, a quote-unquote lid, which indicates that there's no more official activity happening for the remainder of the evening, that reporters can and essentially go home. So we received that lid, and yet after that lid was given to us, we found out through a tweet that he was actually having dinner at 21 Club, which is a local restaurant not too far away. The remaining poolers who were here got in a cab, went to 21 Club. When they arrived, one of them called Hope Hicks, the press person, and she came out and said that we would have to be divided. The local New York press were able to go in, but people with no New York press tags had to remain outside. They were pushed further down the sidewalk and essentially trying to see what they could get as people were leaving. I think they managed to get reaction from Ivanka Trump as she left the restaurant. But having to shout out questions from at least 150 feet away from the restaurant, behind a dumpster, less. So this is kind of, there's no rules regarding this right now. We're told that they will eventually set up some type of briefing room, but we have no specific on timeline.
That's VOA's Tina Trin outside Trump Tower talking to International Edition's Ira Melman. Meanwhile, Hillary Clinton made her first public comments Wednesday night since conceding the election last week. Clinton was honored by the Children's Defense Fund in Washington for her dedication and contributions to the organization and child advocacy throughout her career.
I know many of you are deeply disappointed about the results of the election. I am too, more than I can ever express. But as I said last week, our campaign was never about one person or even one election. It was about the country we love and about building an America that is hopeful, inclusive, and big-hearted.
Her staff has said Clinton will continue her commitment to the causes and values that have always motivated her work as an advocate and public servant. Here are some of the other stories we are following at voanews.com. The Minnesota police officer charged with manslaughter for shooting an African-American man. A decision on the Dakota Access Pipeline not likely until early 2017. A Somali-American gets 30 years in prison for plotting to join Islamic State. New Yorkers look to subway therapy post-election. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Secretary of State John Kerry is trying to ease the minds of those who are concerned that the next U.S. president will gut the historic global accord to mitigate climate change.
While I can't stand here and speculate about what policies our president-elect will pursue, I will tell you this, in the time that I have spent in public life, one of the things I have learned is that some issues look a little bit different when you're actually in office compared to when you're on the campaign trail.
While Trump on the campaign trail spoke of ripping up the Paris Agreement on reducing greenhouse gases, shortly after his surprise victory, Trump appointed climate change skeptic to lead his Environmental Protection Agency transition team. Joining me now is Dr. John Abraham, a professor of thermal sciences. His energy development work has extended to Africa, South America, and Asia. Dr. Abraham, thank you for being with us. How are climate scientists feeling following the election?
Climate scientists, both in the United States and around the world, are in a state of shock because what the Trump election is an unmitigated disaster. In the last 8 years, we've made tremendous progress on dealing with climate change, both domestically and internationally. We've made real progress. And what the election of Trump does is it sets us back at least 10 years. And it's the 10 years that we didn't have to be set back. So it's really a disaster.
When you say sets us back 10 years that we don't have, what do you mean?
The climate problem is a long-term boil problem. You know, it's not something where if you just turn off the heat on your stove, the problem will go away. It's very unlike other pollution problems. And what that means is you have to take action early, and the earlier you take action, the better. The lower the cost and the more likely you'll be successful at handling the problem. Now, what Obama did in his last 8 years is he put in international agreements and domestic targets to not only reduce emissions of heat-trapping gas, but also to make these binding agreements in the international community so that everyone was working together. And in addition to the Obama agreements, we've had a decrease in the cost of renewable energy. And it's really those two things. It's the agreements and targets, along with the decrease of cost of especially wind and solar, that have really given scientists a lot of hope. But you need both of those things together. And what the Trump administration is going to do, or is telling us it's going to do, is it's going to scrap the last 8 years of agreements. It's basically setting us back to when Bush came into office, which was the year 2000. So in that regard, in my mind, we've lost at least a decade in progress. And that's a decade where it means that we're going to have to take more drastic action in the future to compensate for this loss of time. We were on really on the road to recovery, and this is going to set us back.
When you say recovery, we can't turn back what we've already done, right?
That is exactly right. But we can affect the future. The biggest uncertainty in the future climate is what humans do. And what we had done in the last 8 years is make deep commitments to reducing our heat-trapping gases. And in fact, we had started. We were doing really meaningful things and finding that energy costs were going down while we were handling the climate change problem. And so what that does is it makes our future levels of greenhouse gas emissions much lower than they would have otherwise been. And it's not just the United States. It's everyone was working together. And that's really the key. I mean, you're not going to get a scenario where one country takes action and all the others don't. You have to have everyone working together. Mm-hmm. And by the U.S. pulling out, we're one of the highest per capita emissions in the world. If the U.S. pulls out of these agreements, what's the incentive for any other country to stay in those agreements? Why shouldn't they pull out? And if everyone pulls out and these international agreements unravel, then we go back to business as usual. And business as usual means that it is unlikely we will be able to avoid catastrophic climate change. So,
what does that look like?
It looks differently depending on where you are. But here, let me tell you some of the biggest things that we're worried about. We've all heard about sea level rise, and we know sea level rise is happening, and we expect about 3 feet of sea level rise by the year 2100. But the difference between taking action now and not taking action is it'll level off. If we don't take action now and if we roll back our planned agreements, the sea level rise is going to rise by 2100, but then it'll continue to rise. So if you live in a coastal community, especially a city like Miami, Miami's gone. I mean, you cannot wall off cities. So sea level rise is a big deal. 150 million people around the world live within 3 feet of the current ocean sea level. Where are they going to go? How are we going to handle their migration? That's one issue. Another one is ocean acidification. We're actually making the ocean more acidic. We have other issues such as increased storms, more severe and frequent droughts. We're making those droughts worse, which cause economic costs. And then one last example is flooding. What we're finding is that when it does rain, it rains harder, and we are more likely to get flooding, which causes economic consequences as well. So what we're baking into the system is a more severe experience of this kind of weather, and it's going to have very large economic and social consequences.
I would imagine that may also include national security issues around the world.
Absolutely. And in fact, you don't have to take my word for it. You can take the Department of Defense. They set out the risks that they expect to face in the future world. And climate change is at the top of that list. Climate change decreases stability around the world. It's one of the contributing factors for the problems in Syria right now. When you have people who are fighting for water, who are undergoing drought, who are having to deal with forced migration because of rising sea levels, that creates economic and sometimes military strife. And when a problem happens somewhere else in the world, the ripple effects come home to us as well. So if people think, well, you know, if it gets hotter and drier in Africa, that shouldn't affect me. Or if it gets hotter and drier in Asia, that shouldn't affect me. But we're so interconnected now that it's going to affect us all.
All right. Thank you so much. Climate scientist Dr. John Abraham with the University of St. Thomas in Minnesota. While the world continues to absorb the shocking and unexpected election of Donald Trump, many Americans are expressing anxiety and fear. Joining me for that part of the story is New York-based psychotherapist Jonathan Alford. Thanks for being with us. So what have you seen or been seeing since last week's election?
I have to say I have spent the past week trying to calm people's fears and anxieties.
Have you seen an uptick in people coming to see you after the election?
I have, and I've also seen the people who see me on a regular, on a weekly or biweekly basis. This is dominating the conversation, the session. It's on people's minds. Usually people, when they go to therapy, are entirely self-absorbed, and they talk about themselves, but this has sort of allowed people to step out of themselves and look at the society in which they live, the country, the world. So in that sense, perhaps, you know, maybe that's the benefit of this, what many people see as a pretty significant event.
What are you saying to people to try to calm their stress?
I expected a reaction from people, but I have to say the hypocrisy of what I'm seeing is not good. Like, I think we're seeing a whole lot of ugly come out of this. and we need to be better than this. We're seeing anti-white, we're seeing anti-Muslim, we're seeing a lot of things come out of this.
There's obviously a lot of grieving, a lot of pain. People are in pain. People are scared. There are a lot of segments of the population that are frightened. They don't know what's going to happen. So what should they do to feel better?
Well, I think one thing people can do is to try to separate the rhetoric from a very hotly contested, debated election process from policy. And we don't know yet what Trump's policy is, but by taking a step back and looking at history, every candidate says stuff. Every candidate makes promises, says stuff. Some of the stuff is even frightening, but they don't really deliver on this because they can't. And a lot of times they just say these things to appeal to their hardcore base. And I think people should try to separate out the rhetoric from what likely will be the actual fact. And, we've seen a bit of a humbling of Donald Trump when he met with President Obama. He seemed respectful and humbled a bit. So let's hope that holding that office does humble him.
All right. Well, we appreciate your perspective. New York psychotherapist and author of the book Be Fearless, Change Your Life in 28 Days, Jonathan Alpert. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock, on the Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
VOA's International Edition. The holidays right around the corner, and if you have got a gamer on your gift list and you don't know what to buy them, if you're like me, you're not really sure how all this works. Joining me for more on that, freelance journalist Chris Morris to talk about his latest article on CNBC. Chris, what should folks who have a gamer they want to buy a gift for zero in on?
Well, it depends what you're looking for this year. If you're looking for something for the PlayStation 4, the game that you really want to look at is Uncharted 4, A Thief's End. Now, that's an action-adventure series. It's consistently been one of the top-ranking PlayStation exclusive games. This is the fourth and final installment, and it's really in a league of its own. It's just breathtaking venues. It's actually very funny. There are moments of this game that actually you will feel genuine tear-inducing emotions. It's packaged very, very well with some really well-tuned gameplay. This is probably going to be the game of the year for 2016, so it's one to consider. Now, there are a lot of games that are on multiple systems, both it's PlayStation, Xbox, PC. One that you really need to keep an eye out there is Dishonored 2 from Bethesda. Now, this one just came out. It is a stealth action game, so you have the choice as you play to take out an enemy. You can knock them out, you can kill them because it's an action game, or you can avoid them entirely.
What about some of those big franchises that we always hear about, like Call of Duty and so forth?
Call of Duty has a new installment this year called Infinite Warfare, and it's actually getting really good reviews. This is the first time that they've really kind of ditched realism, because that's what Call of Duty has always been known for, and gone sort of in science fiction territory. This one's set in the far distant future, and it's set in outer space. So it's a game that not only has a good single-player mode, which is kind of rare for the Call of Duty games, but the multiplayer mode, which is what everyone really enjoys about those, is just as strong as it has been before. Now, there's also Madden, which, of course, is the big football game that Electronic Arts puts out. If you're buying for someone who is a sports fan, that is your go-to game.
So I know there's really been a surge toward PC gaming and away from the console box that people were so used to using.
There has been, and PC gaming has always been an important part of the video game landscape, but you're seeing a lot more people move in that direction. And if you're looking to do that this year, the game that you absolutely want to pick up is Civilization VI. Now, this is a series that's been around for 25 years now. It is the most addictive series you will find. You always just want to play one more turn. Now, you're once again trying to take over the world, but what makes this series unique is you don't necessarily have to do that in a military fashion. You can establish a dominant religion. You can have the most scientific advances in the game and take off to other planets and win the game that way. It's a lot more refined this year, and the game is very welcoming both to veterans who've been playing this for years and years and newcomers to the series.
And our old standby, of course, Nintendo. What are they up to for the holidays?
Well, you know, Nintendo's launching a new console in the spring, so they're not really playing too hard in terms of trying to get audience for software for the Wii U this year. But what they've got is a little standalone unit called the NES Classic Edition. Now, you might remember the Nintendo Entertainment System from back in 1985. That really kind of kicked off Nintendo's dominance of this market. Well, this is one that just plugs directly into your TV. It comes pre-installed with 30 games, including Super Mario Brothers, Metroid, Donkey Kong, Legend of Zelda. I mean, all the games that you remember from your childhood. They've upgraded it so you can save your games easier than you did back in the 1980s. And more importantly, you can show off to your kids what gaming was like when you were their age.
Yeah. All right. Reporter Chris Morris, thanks so much. You can find him on Twitter at Morris at Large. Well, let's take a look now at what's trending on social media with G. Abby Lee. Hey, G, you've got some awards news.
And let's start with Bob Dylan. The American singer-songwriter is apparently too busy to receive his Nobel Prize in Literature.
That's funny.
On Twitter, you can find an image of the committee's statement on Dylan's absence at the upcoming Nobel Prize ceremony, and it looks like he told the committee that his pre-existing commitments prevent him from flying to Sweden next month. The statement also explained the prize still belongs to Dylan as long as it shows up within 6 months from the ceremony.
Ah, well, a recipient being absent is pretty unusual, but I guess it's not heard of, is it?
That is true, but that didn't stop people from making jokes. I have to tell you, Lori, some of these tweets threw some serious jabs at the Nobel Prize Committee and Dylan. But let's start with one on the funnier side. A reporter tweeted, "Very sorry that Bob Dylan isn't going to Stockholm to accept his epic Nobel Prize. I realize it is bowling night, but still..." I mean, honestly, though, what else could it be?
Thanks, I needed that.
That's so important. But another person wrote, "It's a humiliation of literature and that the prize should have been given to an actual writer."
I like his writing.
A lot of people do. Another person argued, "The committee deserved this for awarding a Nobel Peace Prize to American former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger back in 1973. Kissinger was a controversial recipient.
Yes, but wow, holding a grudge since 1973, that's a long time.
This is not a nice group of tweeters,
wow.
Or at least, yeah.
Doesn't seem like it. So what other prize are we talking about?
This year's Presidential Medal of Freedom Award. U.S. President Barack Obama announced 21 honorees, including two NBA players, entrepreneurs Bill and Melinda Gates, and celebrities such as Tom Hanks and Ellen DeGeneres. You can check out the full list by going to the White House Twitter account at White House. Lori, back to you.
Thanks so much, G. Follow her at G. Abby Lee. Well, fans of Rock and Roll Hall of Famers, the Rolling Stones, will get a chance to see some rare memorabilia from the group in New York, as International Edition's David Byrd has more on a new exhibit, Rolling Stones Exhibition.
If you love the Rolling Stones, then Exhibitionism is for you. The show at New York's iconic Industria Space in the West Village features 500 items from the Stones' storied career. It includes personal items, clothing, musical instruments, films, costumes, and other items in an immersive exhibition that follows the group from its beginnings until the present. Mick Jagger said at a pink carpet celebration when Exhibitionism opened in New York that each room offers visitors something they have never seen before.
Each room, we try to make each room really different. So each room should be kind of like, oh, wow, I wasn't expecting that. So I think it's an entertaining little walkthrough that you can spend an hour. You can linger, but, you know, it takes me an hour to go through.
For guitarist Keith Richards, a recreation of Edith Grove, the Stones' first shared apartment in London, brought back fond memories from decades ago.
that apartment. unbelievably, I looked at it, I'm home. In a way, there's a sense of nostalgia, but I think I walked away with it. And how much the Stones mean to so many people. And in that way, it's kind of humbling in a way.
Exhibitionism also features several of the band's costumes and artworks by Andy Warhol, Alexander McQueen, Prada, Dior, Ossie Clark, and others. It also comes as the band is set to release its first studio album in 10 years in December. Mick Jagger says that the new album was very organic, coming out of a time in the studio when the band had other songs planned.
We were doing an album of new songs in London, and we got in the middle and we started to play blues, and then we did 12 of them in 3 days. So we said, OK, we'll put that out first. So and it's a kind of homage to our blues heroes from our kind of teenage years.
Keith Richards says the new album, like the exhibit, harkens back to the band's roots.
It kind of made itself. We went in the studio and suddenly the blues invaded the room and we just got carried away. And at the end of it, we didn't intend to make an album, but suddenly we realized there was an album there.
Exhibitionism will be in New York until March 12th of 2017 when it heads to Chicago, Illinois. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
That's going to do it for today's show. We thank you for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Zainab Abdul-Rahman. You can find us anytime at voanews.com. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
4 weeks into the military offensive to liberate Mosul from its ISIL occupiers, the combined Iraqi and Kurdish forces have gained a toehold on the outskirts of the city and are pushing in. As they advance, they meet groups of civilians making their way out of the city and away from the fighting, away from brutal ISIL fighters who booby-trap the city and are more likely to shoot at civilians than to aim at opposing troops. But for every civilian fleeing the city, the invading forces encounter countless more who remain hunkered down in their homes. Indeed, conditions within the city are dire, with acute shortages of food, medicines, and daily necessities. So delivery of humanitarian aid and care for Mosul's denizens is an important part of the operation. Because this operation has been long in planning, aid workers had pre-positioned their supplies to ease delivery. We've been actively working with our partners on the ground, that's the UN and the international NGOs, to stand ready to provide emergency shelter, food, water, sanitation, and hygiene services, as well as health support. We're trying to stay ahead of the crisis, which we've been able to do, said a senior administration official during a teleconference. There have been about 3.2 million people displaced from their homes since 2014, and 10 million people in need of assistance. That equates to somewhere around one-third of the Iraqi total population. And the United States has been there supporting the Iraqi people with more than $1.1 billion in humanitarian aid since 2014. Over the summer, we've helped the international community secure pledges for $2 billion as it relates to the Mosul operation, the official said. Aid workers have pre-positioned enough food supplies for about 1.25 million people and have enough in the pipeline and ready for delivery to feed 2.3 million. They are also set to deliver shelter, water, sanitation, health care, and protection. So far, about 34,000 civilians have fled the city of Mosul since the fighting began over 3 weeks ago. But the battle for Mosul has barely begun, and aid workers are ready to deliver supplies to the entire city if necessary.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.